Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there and welcome to Tech Stuff. I am your adorable host, Jonathan Strickland, and sitting in the office with me, my good friend, my coworker, Mr. Ben Boland joins us again. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, Jonathan, thanks so much for having me on the show. Listeners, I hope you are well. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so have you ever seen an advertisement and thought, yes, absolutely, this is for me?
Rarely, but it has been known to happen. I can tell you right now. I can tell you two right off the top of my head. And it's largely because of the tone of the advertising campaign.
Hmm.
Old Spice deodorant.
Right, right.
Dollar Shave Club.
Okay, what about Dollar Shave Club got you?
The commercials for Dollar Shave Club are kind of in that same tongue-in-cheek, snarky sort of approach.
Mm-hmm.
A little not so in your face as to be truly obnoxious, but just barely straddling that line between being charming and being arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it entertaining. And I thought, well, I shave quite a bit, actually, because I got the head that I have to shave.
Right.
Because nature has deprived me of some of my hair, but not all of it. So I have to get rid of the rest. And I decided to try it out because I thought the ads were really entertaining. The idea of the subscription model was much more attractive to me than having to go to the store and ask mm-hmm. to unlock the vault of razors.
Overpriced razors.
Yeah. And it turned out that I loved the product. So the ad did exactly what it was supposed to do. It got my attention. It made me remember the brand, and it ultimately got me to act, which are, that's exactly what ads are supposed to do.
Let me tell you what ads are not supposed to do.
What are ads not supposed to do?
They're not supposed to irritate the audience to the point where they no longer ever want to buy anything ever again, and then they rage quit the internet. So today we're going to talk about ads and ad blockers, and to kind of go into the discussion that's been kind of going around recently about ad blockers, including some of the stuff that's going on in Europe. Some of the stuff that you might have heard about as far as ads and their relationship to malware. What exactly is going on and where do we stand on this? And Ben, you know, you do a lot of stuff here at How Stuff Works, but I specifically asked you in your capacity as one of the hosts of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, because as the host of that show, you've covered the topics surrounding privacy pretty extensively, right? And privacy is one of the factors that comes into play when you're talking about advertising, particularly today when targeted advertising has become such a huge part of strategies. Now, to start this off, before we jump into all of that, I thought I would give kind of a really high level explanation of what is going on behind the scenes, technically, with ads on web pages, and thus how ad blockers are able to work at all. You might think, well, how can an ad blocker recognize and block an ad, but not the content I'm trying to see? So, Ben.
Jonathan.
You work on the web.
Yes.
You've visited a website or two. You probably know that you do so through something called a browser.
Ah, yes. Yes. Something like, Chrome, Firefox.
Edge. Yeah.
And if you are using Internet Explorer, I hope it is only because some outside authority is making you do so.
Right. Like there's an intranet that you can only access with Internet Explorer. Do you remember those days?
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. That was the only reason I had Internet Explorer installed on my old computer was so that I could access our company's former intranet.
Which is ridiculous, but here we are nonetheless on a browser.
Yeah. So when you are visiting a website using your browser, you type in the URL, and you put it in the address bar and you hit that enter button. What is happening is your browser is sending out a request over the internet, and it's essentially saying, hey, the jerk on the other end of this keyboard wants to see, you know, I don't know, what's a good website? Let's say wired.com. That's a great example because Wired's going to come up in other parts of this discussion.
Sure, yeah.
And Wired, by the way, I love Wired.
They do great work.
They do great work. And I've got a lot of friends who have worked for Wired, either in the past or currently. Love their stuff. So you're going to wired.com. What happens is this request goes out over the internet. And it's routed through a series of connections until it gets to the server where wired.com lives.
Which is like the vault of their information.
Yeah. It's an actual physical computer that has the instance of that website stored on it. And then when the request comes in, it serves, thus living up to its name, the information to you. And it goes back across the internet, not necessarily in the same pathway that your request came through. That gets into a discussion of packets that really is immaterial for this.
I think it's a different show.
Yeah. I've talked about packets in previous episodes. So if you really want to know what packet switching is and how all that works, go check out the archives of tech stuff and it's out there. But the information comes to you and your browser puts it together and displays it for you. And it does so based upon the rules set up by the webmaster, right? So whoever put it together, there's language tags that explain how it's supposed to look when it's displayed on your browser. And that's how it works. And so you think, okay, so it's really just a request and then a response. But then you have ads. Now with ads, the content for the ads comes from a different place than the content for the web page itself. So those ads that are on wired.com, they're actually coming from different servers. They're not coming from Wired's server. And the web page just has a space dedicated or some form of a relationship there that's dedicated to the ad that says this is where the ad will go when it's served to the viewer.
And that depends on the arrangement between the advertiser and the content creator.
Yeah. So you could probably, I mean, we could really dive down into this and say all these different types of ads have different rates. Like a banner ad at this point is almost considered to be worthless.
And a banner ad is a term describing those long horizontal ads you will see that take up an entire row, I guess, of a website.
Right.
Yeah.
And you could say like a rail would be the vertical version of that, either on the left or right.
And then there are other things like there are pop-ups,
pop-unders,
animations, yeah, pop-unders.
Tons of different types. And they all have different rates depending upon the lots of factors. How popular is the website and how effective are those ads considered to be? Like the least effective are the ones that are going to be the least expensive. And in some cases, you will find web pages that have completely abandoned some of the cheaper ones because they don't really work anyway.
Right.
And you might as well try and command a higher price. So those impressions, those that data is actually coming from other servers, and they're the advertisers' servers, or the more likely advertising agencies' servers, where that data lives. So as the page is loading up, the sections for the ads, that gets another request saying, hey, send me the information that's supposed to go here. It's coming from this other server. That gets sent to your computer and is inserted into the appropriate section by your browser when it's constructing the whole thing. The way ad blockers work is essentially it has a filter list saying anything coming from these particular servers, don't let it show up. Just don't even let it through the door.
Like madads.com.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I just made up
right.
for the sake of argument.
Right. So anything that would come from that server would automatically get blocked and not be incorporated into the web page as you're displaying it. So that's the general way that most ad blockers work. There's another way too. Their ad blockers can also look for certain tags that are associated with advertising. Like there's actually a tag for ad, that kind of stuff, and just block anything that shows up under that tag. But generally speaking, the idea is just a kind of a bouncer that says anyone from this neighborhood is not allowed into the club. And, so they're checking all the IDs and saying, I'm sorry, you're from a part of the neighborhood where we don't let you in.
It's so discriminatory.
That's how an ad blocker has to work, right? It has to discriminate. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you either get everything or you get nothing. So it has to discriminate.
And we should do a disclaimer.
Yeah. Which is what?
Oh, okay. I'll do it.
Yeah.
So we are fully aware, ladies and gentlemen, that we do work for an internet company. How
yes.
Stuff Works is our parent company for our range of podcasts.
And it is ad-supported.
And it is ad-supported, and quite a few things online are ad-supported.
Yes.
However, I will confess to my hypocrisy because I am an enormous fan of certain ad blockers.
Yeah.
And I completely understand why another person would use an ad blocker, especially given, as you mentioned, the privacy concerns that we'll get to.
Yeah. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on for reasons why people would consider using an ad blocker. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Ben, not to leave you hanging out there, I use ad blockers too. Sometimes I will set exemptions for websites that I think are handling advertising in a responsible way, in a non-invasive, non-potentially harmful kind of way.
Sure.
So you can with most ad blockers set filters and say, anything on this page, go ahead and show me the ad. It's fine.
You can whitelist stuff.
Exactly. So Wired.com, there's an example. That's on my whitelist. A couple of others too. There's some that want to be on my whitelist that I have not put on there. Cough, Forbes, cough. but we'll get into that too. So there are a lot of different reasons, and some of them you could argue are more valid than others for people to want to use ad blockers. So I'm going to run through a few of those. And also I could say that there's other things you can do, like through your browser itself that don't necessarily block ads, but block elements of ads that you might find particularly irritating.
Like an autoplay.
Yeah. Like you can disable video or audio or flash animation, mm-hmm. or you can not even have flash installed. That also helps.
Yeah. But that's tough. I don't know how practical that is.
Yeah. There's a lot of content out there that is dependent upon flash, and without flash, it makes it harder. Now some things have definitely helped by moving to HTML5.
Mm-hmm.
So at any rate, let's talk about some of the reasons folks block ads. Some of them, like we said, are just obnoxious. They're mm-hmm. intrusive. Mm-hmm. They ruin the experience you're trying to have. Mm-hmm. If you are trying to read an article and as you scroll down, a window slides into view covering up the text you're trying to read and is auto-playing some commercial that has no bearing on your life whatsoever, that's a bad experience, mm-hmm. right? Like if I were going on a page about a technical gadget and I'm reading and as I scroll down, an ad for diapers comes on, I'm going to be irritated. I don't have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need diapers myself yet.
You're not reading about something related to diapers.
No, I'm not reading about the latest in diaper tracking software. You know, getting that notification on your app that it's time to change the diaper.
Uh-huh.
I'm not reading any of that. That would be a very bad experience
for me.
I
think it's called Poop Watch.
It could be. I poop. I mean, I do. I don't want to get into it.
That's a different show.
That's probably one that we will not pitch.
I definitely will not guest host on that show.
Yeah. So that's one reason.
Just
because it can be an unpleasant experience depending upon the way the ad is presented.
It's disruptive.
It is disruptive. Another is that it slows down loading time, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is this additional communication that has to happen to pull that information in while the page is loading. And we all know that we have very little patience to wait around when loading a website. If you've ever had one of those days here at work where occasionally our network gets a little sludgy.
Oh, pandemonium.
Oh yeah. You're like typing in, even if you're just typing in something like, I just need to Google something, and you're typing in your Google search and you hit enter and it's not that 0.3 second response.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes like a couple seconds. You go nuts. You're like, what is happening? Pandemonium.
Yeah. We're one slow internet connection away from a series of knife fights.
Yeah. No, I mean, we have the knives here in the office ready to go. I personally plan on hiding because there's some crazy people in this office.
Oh yeah, yeah. Scott Benjamin's got some moves.
He's got a reach too, man. He's got that arm span. So ads also can take up a lot of bandwidth, right? That's another huge problem because a lot of ISPs are using bandwidth caps, especially in the mobile world.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you.
Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
So both in mobile and my home ISP technically have a data cap. Now, I have paid extra to get out of the cap on both sides, but that's because I make enough money where I can pay a little extra to do that. That should not be something – I don't think that should be encouraged. I think that there's no real good reason for data caps, particularly for home networks. But if you have ads activated – that's more data that's coming through. That means that not only do you not want to see these things,
but it's taking away your opportunity to see other stuff.
Exactly.
Have you done a data caps episode, Jonathan?
I haven't, because I probably would be frothing at the mouth by the end of it.
I'm so angry about that. The emperor has no clothes.
Yeah. Let's just say that I think some companies can be a little bombastic.
Mm-hmm.
Which rhymes a lot with a certain ISP that I'm not happy about.
Right. But as you're saying, that's an excellent point, because, you know, let's say you see this ad for diapers and it's a video, right? It's an autoplay video while you're reading about your latest gadget that you're doing research on.
Right.
And then the chances of this happening are very small. But what if it's the proverbial feather on your internet's camel back? You know what I mean? Like, what if that's the thing that happens?
And then the camel just collapses.
And you get the pop-up warning.
Well, then that's
you have exceeded your data cap plan.
And if it's a video-based advertisement, that kind of stuff, I mean, that takes up more data. And, and I mean, you think about how much browsing you do in a typical month. If you are already bumping up against that data cap toward the end of the month, like in that last week, ads could be accumulatively across the rest of the month be enough to make that happen in the middle of the month.
A problem magnified or exacerbated for mobile users.
Exactly. So that's a reason some people use ad blockers. They say, listen, I have a limited amount of data I am allowed to access, and I'm bumping up against it, and I don't have other options. I mean, other than just stopping. But that's crazy talk is what that is. And also, finally, well, two other things. One is that targeted advertising, some people find it very off-putting, right? The idea that let's say that it's not an ad for diapers that's completely irrelevant to my life. Let's say it's an ad that's very relevant. Maybe it's, I don't know, head wax, so that I can get my head up to a nice glossy finish.
Or maybe it's Hamilton. Maybe a conversation about Hamilton.
It could be that, yeah, Hamilton is coming to Atlanta. The musical Hamilton's coming to Atlanta. Buy your tickets. That's an ad that would be precisely targeted to me. And I would freak out. I'd say, yes, yes, yes. And that would be an ad that would work on me, because I would love to see that show.
Yeah.
If you have Hamilton tickets, I will happily take them. All right, so that's a great example. But there are other targeted ads that can be a little scary, right? Especially for people who are trying to research something that's really sensitive. The example that we have given many times on this show is the one about Target, where a young woman had been browsing. Target ended up sending information to the young lady about coupons related to being pregnant. Her father intercepted essentially the coupons and got very mad at Target, saying, how dare you insinuate that my daughter is pregnant? And then later contacted Target again and said, I would like to apologize to you. I had a conversation with my daughter and it turns out that I didn't know about it, but it turns out my daughter is pregnant. Mm-hmm. But that was one of those instances where, you know, your online activity might indicate something you're not comfortable sharing with the world at large. And even right. if your personal identity is not part of that, that almost doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. Like your name is the least important thing about your personal data. What it is you want and need, that's way more important to advertisers.
Right. And your habits, your yeah. frequency of wanting, needing, and acquiring those things.
And sometimes that's helpful. Like if you go onto a shopping site like Amazon mm-hmm. and it starts giving you suggestions based upon things you bought in the past, and you might see something and say, oh, you know what? I do need that. Or I didn't even know that existed and now I want it.
Right. Like based on your preferences for the following science fiction stories, mm-hmm. we think these are novels that you will find of interest.
Right. Hamilton in Space. That would be, right up there. But there are other cases where targeted advertising, you might feel that that's too much of a threat to your privacy. And I can't fault anyone for feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And you might say, look, I don't allow cookies. I don't allow any of that stuff to kind of trace my online behaviors because I want it to be just me, whatever I need to research or access. That's it. And that would be a reason to install an ad blocker so that you don't have that following you around. And then finally, ads can sometimes be a vector for malware. And we'll talk about that specifically in just a little bit. So that's to me, like those are the reasons a lot of people give for why they install ad blockers. And I think, you know, again, to varying degrees, they're valid. And there's some interesting arguments about why ad blockers shouldn't be condemned or outlawed, why they serve a purpose and content providers should not make a big deal out of this. Now, the reason we bring this up is that more and more content providers are using means to detect when an ad blocker is in place.
Right. And you'll get a notification, that says, we see that you're using an ad blocking service.
Right. Right.
And this notification from the website has a range of responses. So you may see something that says, we see you're using an ad blocker. We get it. Ads are annoying, but this is our business.
And right.
this is how we make money. To the furthest extreme, which I think we already alluded to.
Forbes.
Yeah, where the website is crippled or restricted.
Right.
Unless you turn off an ad blocker.
And I get it. Again, we work for a company that makes money through advertising. And I get the need to say, look, I got to protect my business. Mm-hmm. I can't just let people, quote unquote, steal stuff.
Right, right? Right.
I can't let people walk in, take things, and there's no means for me to generate revenue because then I can't pay the people who work for me. Mm-hmm. If I can't pay the people who work for me, I go out of business. And then you don't have the content in the first place. That is a valid argument, right?
Sure.
That is valid to say, look, I have to be able to generate revenue in order to do the thing you want. You came to me, Buster. You put in my address in your little URL bar, or you did a search and followed a link.
Right.
So I have something you want, but you want it for free, and I can't perpetually give it away for free because then I can't pay the rent. Mm-hmm. I can't buy food. Mm-hmm. We have to have this exchange for this to work. I get that. But some people say, listen, condemning the ad blockers is the wrong way to go. And here is the reasoning. It sounds a lot like the same reasons people say piracy doesn't ultimately matter that much online.
Okay. I'm scooting to the edge of my seat.
Yeah. So here's the argument. The argument is that the people who install ad blockers are the people who would otherwise be ignoring your ads anyway.
Oh, a self-selecting sample.
Yeah. They would be the ones that ads would not be effective on them. They don't want the ads. They don't see the ads. They're blocking the ads mainly because they just don't even want the distraction there. So these are lost revenue. They're never going, their impressions don't matter.
They are never going to buy those diapers.
Yes. And so the argument is that if you factor in their impressions, if you were to say, okay, no ad blockers, then the people who figure out the rates for advertising, the ones who say, here's how much it's worth to display an ad on your site. If they say, well, you don't allow ad blockers and you've got X per, you know, X number of visitors per month, we estimate that a certain percentage of those, let's say 30%, would normally use ad blockers if you allowed it. That 30% is worthless to us. So it dilutes the value of advertising on your web page because you're forcing them to look at something that doesn't work for them, which means it's a lost cause. You can't count those numbers and say that's a success. You can't say this 30% of people who saw your ad means that it's worth X amount because they're worthless.
And so to see the analog and the piracy argument there, I assume it would be the same thing that such that a person who pirates, torrents, downloads, illegally streams some sort of video. Let's go with Game of Thrones.
Sure.
Okay, so someone who is stealing Game of Thrones, which I believe still holds the record for the most torrented.
I'm pretty sure that every time that a new season debuts, it breaks the record.
Yeah. So people around the world are stealing the holy heck out of this thing.
Yeah.
But would they have, would they have paid for an HBO subscription? Would they have?
Or HBO Now. Or,
right.
Right. Would they have gone through a regular channel anyway? And the answer is it's impossible to say, but it appears that there are lots of people out there who will pirate something. And the really easy examples are the ones that like movies that a lot of people aren't feeling very strongly about beforehand.
Right.
Like there was the Wolverine film, Wolverine, the Origins film, and it was getting panned by critics and it got pirated like crazy. And then you had the studio say, hey, you've stolen revenue from us. And the pirate said, we weren't going to pay to see your movie at all. So really the option was we steal your movie and watch it, which granted for you stinks, or we don't see the movie at all. But either way, you don't get any money.
Right.
So it's a weird argument to make saying like, well, you're not losing revenue because you wouldn't have made it anyway. You would not have made those sales. So saying that the piracy cost you sales is disingenuous. But saying that people are accessing your content without paying for it fairly, that's totally legitimate. That's a completely legitimate argument. So it's a little bit of a perspective issue, right? It depends on what you're arguing for. If you're saying you're costing me because otherwise you would have bought this thing, that may not hold true. But if you're saying you're stealing something I made and really you should pay for it, that's a different argument. So that's kind of laying the groundwork for the rest of our conversation here. Let's start with, some thoughts. Like when I talk about that targeted advertising, we mentioned the example. Have you ever really looked into that at all for stuff they don't want you to know or anything related to that?
Yes. Yeah. The example of you're talking about the kid, right?
Yeah.
Predicting the birth. Yes, we have looked at this in a couple of different ways. And one of the ways that we looked into it most often would be the concerns of big data, the information that people just emanate or create through their passage online. Picture your average day on the internet, like one of those old Family Circus comic strips with the map and the little dotted line.
Yeah.
And those accumulated.
When Billy goes running around the neighborhood.
Exactly. God, Billy walk in a straight line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Come on, kid.
Right. But this is a good comparison because those breadcrumbs, those accumulated dashes of our circuitous lines in our day-to-day traffic establish a precedent, establish a pattern, and most people, most internet users are astonished when they see how accurate or how sophisticated the profile painted of them can become. You know, you may say, I have a collection of different passwords.
Right.
You may say, you know, you and I earlier did an episode on whether it's possible to be anonymous on the internet.
Yeah.
And it is possible, but it is such a pain in the keister.
Right. And the more activity you do, the less possible it becomes.
Exactly.
Because while, again, like when I said your name is the least important piece of information about you, it really is. People don't need to know your name to know who you are based upon the things that are important to them.
Which is why it is, again, I love that you use the word disingenuous, which is, it's disingenuous as well to say this data is anonymous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because all sorts of little data points point to who you are as a person, even if it doesn't give you a first and last name.
Right. It's like saying these fingerprints are anonymous.
Yeah.
They're still somebody's fingerprints.
Exactly. And the stuff we leave behind, it's kind of like a digital fingerprint. Mm-hmm. And some of that information might be stuff that a lot of people know about us, like the Hamilton thing. Ben clearly knows about it. Of course, we talked about it before a video shoot earlier
yeah,
today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's something that, you know, people know, who know me, they know that I'm a big fan of musicals.
But then there may be other stuff that you don't want people to know. Let's say there's a, you or someone close to you has a medical condition.
Right.
Right. And you don't want people to, you know, you don't want people to know, for instance, that let's just say your partner or your spouse is being tested for some sort of cancer.
Right. That's none of anyone else's business, but
right.
Me and my spouse, right? That's an example that is perfectly cromulent in this case.
Right. And I know it's an extreme one.
But... Right. Right. But it's anything like that, right? Anything right. Where it's like, it's not that I'm ashamed of something, that I've done something wrong. Far from it. It's just
right.
That it's a piece of information I don't want to share with the rest of the world.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network.
Our activities online can inadvertently, in some cases, give that information to third parties, which may use it in order to try and profit from it. Not necessarily maliciously either.
Sure.
That's where the targeted advertising comes in. And you get this targeted ad that is again, not malicious. It's necessarily, we'll talk about malicious ads in a minute.
Right.
Not malicious in intent, but it could have a negative impact on your experience of being right. online, because then you think, I thought I was being careful. I thought mm-hmm. no one knew, but right. now someone knows.
Now I logged into Facebook. After I was logged out of Facebook, by the way, those are some pernicious cookies.
Oh, yeah.
After I was logged out of Facebook, ostensibly, and checked on, learned about the specific type of cancer my spouse might have, came back, logged in.
And now I see an ad for a cancer clinic.
Mm-hmm, in coping with cancer. That's in intrusive. That is offensive.
Yeah, it's to a point where, like, that is not the direction that I think a lot of people were thinking about when mm-hmm. they started thinking about the potential for targeted ads.
Like absolutely not.
The ideal situation is that the ads you see are the ones that are relevant to you and your situation and ones that would be effective in getting you to purchase a product or service.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's ultimately what ads are for. Ads are there to inform you and convince you you need this thing or service or whatever it may be. And if it's done well, then mm-hmm. everyone's happy because mm-hmm. we all get access to the stuff we want. We see things that we want to purchase. The advertisers succeed in what they're doing. Their clients succeed. Everyone is happy. The problem is that that's a very narrow band of the overall experience that people have had with targeted advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And again, has led to this realm of this culture where ad blockers are seen as being a perfectly legitimate response to that. And it's funny because, you know, we've both talked about how we admitted to using ad blockers.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed at how many articles I came across where they're written on websites that have advertising
right.
by employees of that website. And the employees are saying, yeah, I use ad blockers too, right? Like to the point where you're sitting there thinking like, wow, this is pretty heavy stuff when you're seeing it from other journalists. And in fact, there was an editor, Duncan Riley, a publisher, in fact, mm. Duncan Riley, who wrote in SiliconAngle.com a piece that came out today, in fact, April 29th is when we're recording this, 2016. And the title of the piece is Confession of a Longtime Publisher. I now use an ad blocker and I like it. And the piece kind of lays out the same sort of things we've been talking about already and mentions that there's already a problem here. The big problem is that advertising has become so obnoxious that it is counterproductive. It is doing the opposite of what it is intended to do. It is driving people away, not bringing people in.
Right. And to the point where, people are looking at advertisement not as a vast series of varying cases, but as one monolithic thing.
Yeah. And really, it doesn't take that many really bad experiences to paint with broad strokes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you get something like a truly awful experience. That's enough to convince people to say, well, even for the ads that are not that bad, I'd rather go ahead and use an ad blocker to avoid the ones that are that bad, even if I only encounter those rarely.
And part of the problem there is a question of evolution and learning curve, because a lot of targeted advertising functions in an automated fashion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no person there to apply human compassion and judgment.
There's no one saying, oh, Jonathan Strickland, eh? I feel like it's time for some diapers.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's no diapers button behind the scenes. I wish there were.
I wish there was.
It'd be hilarious to see, like, there's just some mischievous, impish person
right.
sitting behind the scenes with a massive panel of buttons.
And different buttons for different things.
Yeah.
One's like cheaper razor blades.
Right. Well, Jonathan, you've been shifting in your seat. Here's an ad for stool softener. Think, what the heck is going on?
We're working him up to an eye poop.
That's right. We'll be pitching that later. So, one of the other things that Duncan Riley pointed out in this piece that I thought was interesting, he said that the other big push in online advertising right now, apart from video ads, which, I mean, that, because of mobile, the mobile experience, video ads has become a big thing.
Right. The you other can big, skip this ad in five.
Yeah.
Four.
Exactly. Right. The big one is, native advertising, which, to you guys out there may not mean very much. To people in our position, it means our worst nightmare.
So what is native advertising for people who are not, because that's a little bit of an inside baseball term.
Native advertising is when you get paid by a company to produce a specific piece of content, typically one that supports that company's products.
Also known as advertorial.
Yes. And a lot of, like, if you do it really, really well, which is very hard to do, but if you do it really, really well, it can still be informative, it can still be entertaining, and it can still do the purpose of advertising whatever the product or service is without it feeling absolutely creepy on the part of the person who had to write it. But it is really hard to do that.
Yeah, it can feel creepy for the people creating this because native advertising can put someone in an ethical dilemma.
Yes.
Wherein, for instance, let's say Jonathan and I have a show wherein we are going to do a tech stuff about the technology behind strip mining. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And while we're exploring that, naturally, you and I would say, well, here are some things you need to know about strip mining.
Here's like the environmental impact of strip mining.
Right.
Here's the historical significance, the political battles that have happened over strip mining.
Exactly.
Here's how it has affected people who live in areas where strip mining happened. But if it were a piece of native advertising where a mining company had paid for it and they said, all right, you can do pieces on it. Just don't mention any of those things.
Right, right. And don't call it strip mining. We have a new term. We call it mineral hugs.
Yeah. Then that would be problematic. And as Riley points out, he says that, you eventually end up with advertising pretending to be editorial. He says, and that not only sucks, if not labeled properly, it's downright dishonest and constitutes deceiving your readers. And we know you guys are smart, right? Like the people who are in the writer and editorial departments, we know you're smart. We know that you can tell when something is like that.
Oh, buddy. Yeah. The, anyone on the internet, although you'll hear all these stereotypes of people being credulous in general.
Yeah.
More so than a radio or a television audience, people who listen to podcasts, people who go online for their news or entertainment are very, very aware of this. They can sense, they can like, they're like Matt Murdock.
Well, for right? one thing, we've been sold to all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We, in America, we have grown up in a culture of advertising and selling.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you get good at recognizing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's an argument that often comes up when it gets down to sales versus editorial, which doesn't happen that frequently, but it has happened. Then the editorial will say, listen, this is a road we don't want to go down because right. It is a bad experience for our audience.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize what it is right away. It is very hard to do well.
And it doesn't work for the advertiser.
Right. It doesn't do anyone any favors.
Right.
It tells the audience, we don't value your intelligence. We don't think that you're smart enough to realize that this is essentially an advertisement you're reading. And the audience ends up saying, well, if you don't value me, I don't value you, let alone the products
right.
you're trying to sell. So I'm out. And we know this. And so native advertising is one of those things that, again, if you do it very transparently and if you are very careful, I think you can do it well.
If you have a separation of, a separation of church and state in a way.
Yeah.
That's a phrase that we've used before. Wherein, so let's say, just for an example, let's say, ladies and gentlemen, that Jonathan does a show, for just your average everyday podcast, right? It's tech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Does a tech stuff episode is approached in the, by someone who wants him to do some native advertising for, let's see, a cell phone.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Those are popular. And, then Jonathan with the editorial oversight would say, well, if we do this, I want it to be clear. This is brought to you by,
right,
you know, whomever.
Right. And just say, like, so people who listen to it from the very beginning, they know what they're getting into. Mm. And that they trust me to give them information that is honest. It may be right. that due to that agreement, there are certain things I'm not allowed to talk about for whatever reason. But as long as I'm completely honest up front and just say, you know, this episode is brought to you by so and so. We're mm-hmm. going to talk about their product today. Here's what I have to say about it. That's okay. It's even better if they give you full editorial control where you
sure.
can, like, you can say, like, can I say things that may be a little critical of the product as mm-hmm. long as I'm being fair? Like, I'm not attacking,
right.
but I'm bringing up concerns people have had because if I don't do it, my listeners will.
Being objective. Being at the forefront of this, what I love about the line of argument we're looking at here is that the editor, the publisher in question, is absolutely correct. It's a new, it's a more evolved form of targeted advertising because then the target becomes not just someone who looked at someone who Googled something three times in the past week, it becomes any audience member that trusts you.
Yes.
And that, and then all of a sudden there's this prepackaged demographic.
Assuming that you have any, you know, perceived integrity and reputation, then absolutely.
No, your reputation precedes you.
Yeah. I'd like to think that people believe I have integrity. If you do not think I have integrity,
please feel free to send
an email to Stuff You Should Know.
with this targeting stuff, as you said, it is difficult to do. It can be done well. For example, The Daily Show under Jon Stewart's regime.
Yeah.
Under Jon Stewart's run on the show, they had Arby's as a sponsor.
Right.
And what was hilarious about it is every time they brought up Arby's, they talked massive amounts of trash
right.
about Arby's.
Yeah, know? but to the point where Arby's got the joke.
Yeah.
And they incorporated the joke themselves on his last episode. There was like a statement from Arby's saying, "We'll miss you, John." And I just thought, like, well, that's amazing. Like, how many companies do you know
that are that savvy?
That would say, like, look, they're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really trying to damage our brand.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it's really about. Let's just have fun too. I mean, that's a hard decision to make because if you feel your brand is under attack.
Right.
Then, you know, you want to go on the offense as soon as possible.
Right. So that's the reason why a certain bombastic cable provider
yes.
hasn't just gone the whole nine yards yet and used the Monopoly Man and Darth Vader as their sponsors.
Right.
Or as their mascots.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, as it turned out, you and I talked a lot more.
What?
About ads than we anticipated. I thought this was going to be like a 40-minute conversation. It mm. turned out to be about an hour and 20 minutes. And that's pretty long for an episode of Tech Stuff.
Right.
So in order to preserve the sanity of my listeners, I thought we might cut it off here, post the recording, and pick up where we left off next week. So let people know where they can find your work.
Ah, yes. While you're waiting for the next episode of our series on targeted advertising here at TechStuff, why not visit Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, wherein you can find TechStuff host Jonathan Strickland exploring the darker side of technology in our show, which covers conspiracy theories, corruption, allegations of the paranormal, and more.
Nice.
More. Is that cool? I do my own post.
Yeah, no, it's good. You know, that way we decrease the load on the publication side. And guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, why don't you write them to me? Because shouting them out the window hasn't been helping. The email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And remember, you can also get in touch with me on social networking. You can use Twitter or Facebook. And both of those, use the handle techstuffhsw to get your message to me. As in, use that one to direct your message at. Don't actually use TechStuffHSW. That's mine. Keep your filthy mitts off of it. So until next time, I hope you guys have a great one, and I will talk to you again about ads really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.